Are you still there?
Yes, Deepak. We're just fiddling with the volume buttons. I'm sorry. Keep on going. I missed that last little bit that you said.
Okay, so he's a member of RSS, which is a paramilitary organization and a parent organization of the BJP. I earlier mentioned that he's known for his fiery speeches and controversial tweets about women, about India's religious minorities, especially about Muslims. I'm just quoting one of his tweets where he has said that 90% Arab women have never had an orgasm in the last few hundred years, and every mother has produced kids as act of sex and not love. So that's one of his many tweets, which give you an idea of how controversial some of these tweets are and how divisive his style of politics is. Some of the other speeches and social media posts talk about Hindu supremacy and how Hinduism should be the dominant religion of India, and how religious conversions should be brought under control, and how Hinduism is under threat from Christianity and from Islam because of conversions to all the Abrahamic faiths. So yeah, that's very briefly about Tejasvi Surya.
No, thanks for that, Deepak. I was wondering if you could also explain a little bit about the nature of the BJP and the RSS in Indian politics, because a lot of people in Australia don't, including people within progressive movements, are not aware of the role of these organisations. And what we hear in the mainstream media in Australia is India being the biggest democracy in the world, and there's very little discussion or questioning about the some of the horrific comments being made by BJP politicians, including some calling for death to Muslims, the initiation of pogroms, attempting to build Hindu temples over the top of mosques, etc. So I'm just wondering if you could explain a little bit about these two organisations, given that the mainstream media in Australia just simply does not cover what they're doing in India.
To understand BJP's politics, I'll just go back a little and give a very quick lesson on India's post-independent history. India became independent from colonial rule in 1947. And the founding fathers, you could say, of independent India and its constitution, people like Gandhi, who you may have heard of, and then people like Nehru and Ambedkar, who was the author of India's constitution. India created a very secular constitution where people from all faiths had equal rights and the right to practice their own religion. India also started with a very socialist system of governance where the public sector and the government played the role of the engine for economic growth. And largely, although the system has its problems, that system seems to have served India well so far. But all that changed in 2014 and when BJP got elected and then re-elected in 2019. And one significant change that has happened in the Indian society is the increased attack on religious minorities, especially Muslims. So there are vigilante mobs who have acted with impunity. There has been, government, and without the government taking any action on some of these activities, like banning of beef or people being attacked on suspicion of carrying beef. People have been murdered on suspicion of carrying beef or eating beef. Lately, there has increasingly been claims, as you mentioned, that several mosques have been built on ancient Hindu temples, and there has been almost a national movement identifying dozens of mosques, which are the Islamic prayers, you know, places of worship, to demolish them and rebuild the temples that existed in their place, and a whole lot of political dog whistles coming from political leaders in India. And people have acted with impunity. They've been increasing attacks on Muslims, generally speaking, especially the ones who are outspoken or who protest against these activities. There's again increasing attacks on social activists, on journalists, on academics who speak out, who are critics of the government. They are either hounded or jailed or under some very draconian anti-terror laws, and especially the Indian state of Kashmir, where the Kashmir had a very special status under the Indian constitution, that was revoked 2 or 3 years ago, and the Kashmir has since been under heavy military rule, under a total lockdown. In the first year of the change of Kashmir status, all communication was cut down. There was no internet or hardly any internet. All the radio and television and access to the world and telephonic communication was severely restricted. And the place is one of the most militarized in the world, and there have been some very serious human rights violations, according to the reports that have come out. One of the other things BJP has done is it has, in some of the states where BJP rules, it has introduced anti-religious conversion laws and also laws to curb interfaith relationships between people because they seem to believe, or at least the mobs that support BJP believe that Muslims in particular use India's religious freedom to convert, to lure Hindu women into leaving their religion, marrying Muslim men, and then converting them into Muslims, into Islam. Recently, there was news of a hijab ban where young women were not allowed to attend university or school if they wore a hijab, and there has been nationwide protests against that and worldwide outcry against these. And then the press, the Indian media has largely become a mouthpiece of the government. India has slid very fast to about 150 in the World Press Freedom Index, 150 out of 180 countries. So it's very close to the bottom when it comes to press freedom, very, you know, comparable to countries like China, North Korea, Saudi Arabia. Hate speech is rife, there's, you know, acts of vilification and violence against Muslims and Christians, and their places of worship have been on the rise. Recently, there was an incident where there were mock internet auctions of prominent and outspoken Muslim women were held there. People made bids for them. I mean, of course, these were not real auctions, but the idea was to humiliate, publicly shame Muslim women who are prominent figures in India and who are outspoken against the Modi government. In all this, there is no accountability of Modi, Narendra Modi, who is India's prime minister. He has never attended a press conference, not given any unscripted interview since he came to power in 2014. Recently, as you would have heard, there was a Quad summit in Japan where every other head of government spoke to the press except Narendra Modi. So he can't be held accountable. None of his ministers can be held accountable. They just do not speak to the press. The U.S. Commission for International Religious Freedom, which is a government body that monitors religious freedom in different countries, for 3 years in a row they have classified or categorized India as a country of particular concern. Another U.S. body, Freedom House, has for 2 years in a row declared India as partly free as a democracy, and Kashmir, the state of Kashmir in India, which is the only Muslim majority state, as not free. Vidim, another Swedish democracy watchdog, has categorized India as an electoral autocracy. So this is about BJP's politics. Then RSS, you spoke about RSS. RSS is the, you could say, the parent organization, or it's part of the group of organizations that form the Sangh family in India, and it's a far-right Hindu nationalist organization that aims to create an ethnic Hindu majority state. In 1948, soon after India became independent, Mahatma Gandhi, who was the leader of India's freedom movement, was assassinated by a former RSS member and a Hindu nationalist. RSS has been banned more than once after India's independence for various reasons. It is inspired. As an organization, it has never made any secret of its love for the European fascist movements, in particular Adolf Hitler. The first chief of RSS, who was a person called Goldwalker, and one of their heroes, Savarkar, were admirers of Hitler, and they have openly written, there are public statements from them, admiring the European fascist movements, mainly for Hitler's cultural nationalism and the persecution of the Jews. RSS also runs extremist outfits that have been charged with participating in communal riots and running campaigns against religious minorities in India. A few years ago, a famous case of Babri Mosque in India, which was demolished by a mob of RSS and Vishwa Hindu Parishad, another organization related with the BJP. Their activists, they brought down the mosque, claiming that it was the site for a temple. So there's a whole lot of, and they have many other organizations that run campaigns against religious minorities. One such organization is an organization called Balj Bajrang Dal, which is the youth wing of the Vishwa Hindu Parishad, which translates to World Hindu Council, whose leader was convicted for a hate crime and murder of an Australian pastor called Graham Staines in 1999 in India, when he and his two sons were burned to death on suspicion of converting people into Christianity. And if you go to the RSS website, it makes no secret of their contempt for not just Muslims, but also Christian missionaries, whom they consider to be foreign elements trying to interfere with their dream of a Hindu India. So, I could go on for a long time.
Yes, Deepak, I might just interrupt you there so that we can, because we're getting towards the end of the show. I was wondering, a number of universities lent their support, became partners or endorsers of the meetings that this right-wing BJP politician was speaking at. The organisation that invited him here is the Australia-India Youth Dialogue, and some of the universities that were initially listed as endorsees or are still listed as endorsees are Monash University, Deakin University, Sydney University and Macquarie University. I gather Melbourne University pulled out eventually, and some other universities pulled out. And then I noticed the comment from the spokesperson for Sydney University was that we also accept that Dialogue does not endorse particular political views, but rather seeks to provide a platform for the diverse and complex range of views that exist in both India and Australia. And like this anemic statement from Sydney Uni. Like, if this was someone who openly declared they were supportive of Hitler, there's no way Sydney University and these other universities would have lent their name to support this these meetings. So I guess that brings me to the point that some of the universities, I assume, which endorsed this event, didn't realise the fascist nature, origins and nature of the RSS and its incredibly discriminatory, violent, Islamophobic and misogynist calls that have been made by their guest speaker, Tejasvi Surya. I was just wondering if you could, like a sort of a final, we've only got 3 minutes for the rest of the show, if you could explain just a little bit in 3 minutes how some of these BJP-aligned organisations are taking advantage of multiculturalism in Australia to advance racist and discriminatory far-right politics in Australia, and why people should, why Australians should come to support this protest against this right-wing BJP politician at 2 p.m. this Saturday outside the Thornbury Theatre, why Australians should support this protest. Thanks,
okay.
Deepak.
Okay. So various groups, including student bodies, interfaith groups, and Australian Alliance Against Hate, of which the Humanism Project, my organisation, is a part, they've been protesting and urging partner universities to withdraw, and the visa urging the government to withdraw, cancel the visa of the Tejasvi Surya. So once this started, the logos of many universities that appeared on Australia India Youth Dialogue have been removed. Universities have not confirmed that they've done it as a result of the protests. Some of them have said that they were not authorized to use our logo, and they've asked the organization to remove it. Their logos. But more importantly, I think BJP-aligned organizations with the Indian population growing in Australia, organizations aligned with BJP and the family of organizations that are connected with the BJP are growing in influence in politics, in media, even education. During the elections, you may have noticed there was some news of Liberals, Labour, One Nation, United Australia Party, even Morrison and Albanese in a saffron coloured scarf, which created a huge hue and cry about them supporting an organisation called Vishwa Hindu Parishad, the World Hindu Council.
Deepak.
I'll wrap up very quickly because some of that hate has reached Australia. There is, there are social media posts, Facebook posts, etc., which are routinely being used, dog whistles, derogatory words against Muslims and Christians, and that we believe is causing serious social discord and disharmony within the Indian community here, and therefore we feel it's very important that people like Tejasvi Surya, who have a history of spreading hate, there is control, and Australia is careful before the people like him are invited. So we want to avoid giving him a platform.
We're going to have to end the show, Deepak, because another show is getting ready to present straight after this one.
Thank you
very much. For coming on air and talking about all of this. We'll get you back, I think, for more discussion on another occasion. I think we want to explore these issues further, and the protest will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Thank you.